1. Okay. Hi, my name is Jen, and I'm a compulsive overeater and addict.
Hi, Jen.
And I came into program for the first time in 2005. That was not my first OA meeting. My first OA meeting, I think, was sometime in 97. I came home from a day at school. I was in graduate school, and my roommate at the time, my apartment mate, was there waiting for me to have a serious discussion, capital S, capital D, and informed me that sometimes when he came home and saw me cooking or eating dinner, he felt like he was walking in on somebody shooting up, and suggested that perhaps I was treating food like a drug and that I needed to find an OA meeting. And I hadn't heard of OA. I had heard of AA and Al-Anon, but I hadn't heard of OA. So I went to a meeting, and I sat there, and I cried the whole time. They read the OA preamble, which I love, you know, welcome to OA, welcome home. And it was very obvious that I had found people like me, and I cried the whole time. Just sat there with tears running down my face and listened. And it was a very small meeting. It was maybe about 4 other people. And it was in Washington, D.C. And I left, and I never went back there. I think I tried out another meeting while I was down in D.C. I spent about 6 years down there. That was my first year. And what was interesting about that is that that particular roommate and I had shared a house with 2 other people across the country in San Diego. So he had kind of had this view of my how my eating had gotten worse over time. And so I went to another OA meeting, I think, in D.C. a year or two later. And this one was a huge meeting, and it was obviously a very popular meeting. And it was, there was someone who was there, and in her share, she addressed the speaker and basically told the speaker that her experience was, you know, not going to work, and she really just kind of needed to surrender further. And that kind of scared me a little bit. And it's one of the reasons I've always been grateful that this meeting has a statement against crosstalk. Because I didn't feel safe there. And I left. And I used that as an excuse. And that was on me. I used that as an excuse not to go back for a long time. I don't know why I'm an overeater. I don't know why I have this particular addiction. I can talk about my family history. I can talk about how there is addiction in my family. It usually centers around alcohol. How I was so busy trying not to be an alcoholic that still didn't mean that I had sort of the skills to deal with adult life, so I reached for the food. How this is a progressive disease for me, so that, you know, I grew up with, I think, a very normal relationship with food. I remember what it was like to be a normal eater. I remember being able to eat even my favorite foods and even have seconds, but sort of put my spoon down when I was done and, you know, just know when I was done and when it wasn't going to taste good anymore and didn't want anymore. And now I can't even imagine doing that. Like, I can't even... I mean, it's progressive. I remember the first time I was at least conscious of eating emotionally or eating for something other than gosh, it's dinner time with the family, or, you know, I need to eat because I'm hungry. You know, I remember using food emotionally to get through an experience, and how it soothed me. And how I began to do that more and more. And I don't know when I lost the power of choice over it. I don't know when it began to control me and I stopped using it. And when, you know, I lost the ability to decide that I wasn't going to use that particular coping mechanism. I do know it took me a long time to admit that it controlled me. You know, it took me years after I realized that I used food emotionally, which was probably in college. The first time I remember doing it, looking back, was in high school. But, you know, that I realized it had become a pattern and something that I used to deal with life emotionally on a regular basis, that was in college. I don't know between the time, between that time and the time, oh, about 8 years later. No, maybe 12 years later, that my roommate said to me, you know, it feels like coming home and watching somebody shoot up. And even at that point, I wasn't ready to acknowledge that I had an addiction. I kind of got that I had a problem with food. It wasn't until, you know, and maybe I was afraid to do it. Maybe I was afraid to admit that because I couldn't imagine giving up the food and being able to succeed at what I was doing, which was going through a graduate program and writing a dissertation. Like, I felt like I needed to be this disembodied brain in order to get through that. And I really wished that I was, and I came to really despise my body and despise the fact that I was a embodied human being. I kind of wished that I wasn't, that I didn't have to deal with this physical world and that I could just be a brain. I graduated and I got my first job and I came up here to Boston, and a couple of years later I realized that my pattern was is that I would go to work and be pretty highly functional at work, and then I would come home and shut the shades and cook dinner and basically not stop eating until it was time to go to bed, and I would turn on the TV and I wouldn't answer the phone, and that was pretty much my life. So work was my life. Food was my life. I tried to have other parts of my life. And it just didn't work. Because at the end of the day, what I really wanted to do was go home and go home to the food. It was my best friend. It was my comfort. It was always there for me. It was my higher power. I stopped being able to pray, which was kind of big because my whole life was tied up in my religion, including my graduate work and my job. And so, you know, it's not as though I didn't have a relationship with a higher power coming in. I did, but I couldn't get through the food to see it, to experience it, to make a connection. That scared me. And I went out to dinner with a friend. We actually went out for one of my favorite binge foods. And we were sitting there, and I remember telling him. And he did a little research on the internet. And next day, he wrote me an email, and he said, it turns out there are other people like you. You should try out this Overeaters Anonymous thing. And at that point, you know, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, I think I went to some meetings in D.C., and it didn't, like, but I really didn't have a very clear memory of it. I just knew I'd heard of it before, and it wasn't until later that I remembered the meetings that I had been to. And so I went to a meeting, and this time I stayed. I stayed for a couple of years, I went to the Saturday morning 9:30 meeting, which used to be at St. E's and I think is now at Brighton Marine. And I found a sponsor there, and I, within a couple of weeks, I committed to not eating outside of meal times, and that was my first, and making a list of my binge foods, and not eating my binge foods.
Sorry.
That's okay. Is that?
That was 10.
Okay, great.
Sorry.
That's all right. Not eating my binge foods, and that was pretty much my first food plan. And I was able to do that. I mean, you know, I called my sponsor, and I had, like, had a binge food for breakfast, which wasn't even a typical breakfast food, and I called her, and I said, yeah, so I've already ruined today. And she said, yeah, but you can start now, and so I did, and I was abstinent for a long time, and at least that food plan put boundaries around my food. I did lose some weight. I came in at like 275 pounds, and over the next, 6 months, 4 months, I lost about 50 pounds, and then I just kind of held there for a while. Because I wasn't willing to go further, I wasn't willing to tighten up the food plan further. But to the extent that I was willing to do something, to limit my food to meal times, all of a sudden there was life between meals, right? And there was life after dinner. Like, dinner had a beginning and an end, and there was life, and I was able to get involved with things outside of work, and I was able to go to my meetings, and I was able to participate in communities and activities outside of work, and I got a life, and I was able to develop a relationship with a higher power, and really deepen that, and trust that when I felt the desire to binge outside of those times, I could simply turn it over, and that God would remove it, and that I would be okay. And that worked for about 4 years, and that, I think, was significant recovery, until it didn't work. And about 4 years in, it kind of stopped working. My meals kept getting a little crazier, and my I started wondering, well, why can't I have that, and shouldn't I be able to have that by now, and shouldn't I be able to figure out, like, how this works, and people keep telling me to tighten up my food plan, and they keep telling me what to eat and what to do, and I stopped being willing, I gradually left. I never made a decision to leave, but I sort of gradually left. And I left in 2009, and I used the fact that I had a surgery, that I had a 6-week recovery period from, as sort of an excuse to break my abstinence and start eating the foods that I knew were trigger foods for me. And it started in the wiggle room that was built into my food plan. And then, I went out and I did a little bit more research. So, I'm an academic, and that's what we do. And I thought that I should be able to figure it out on my own intellect, what would work for me, because program was only working sort of. And I thought, well, I'll take something from church, and I'll take something from program, and I'll take something from Weight Watchers, and I'll take something from this or whatever. And if I could just figure out what the exact right program is for me and then follow it, then I wouldn't, need any of these other things. And I could simply cure my own eating disorder. And, I thought that I should be able to do that through the strength of my own intellect and the strength of my own will, that I should be able to figure out and then put it into practice. What it was, I thought about going back to school to get a PhD in psychology, because of course nobody figured it out yet, and I figured, you know, well, I'll just, that'll be my project and I'll do it. And because, you know, lots of really, really people who are a lot smarter than me haven't been able to do it, so I should be able to do it by just going back to school and taking more classes and reading more books, because that's the answer. You know, it wasn't until I admitted I had researched my way up to over 300 pounds in November 2012. My doctors were talking about bypass surgery. I was killing myself slowly with food. I had high blood pressure, and I had a CPAP machine because I had positional sleep apnea, and I had a bunch of other health problems, and I just knew that it had defeated me, and the question on the table was bypass surgery, and something in me knew that it wasn't, that yes, I might lose weight, because it would fix my stomach, but it wasn't going to fix my brain. Mm-hmm. Now, I know people who have had bypass surgery and done program, and that works for them. And so I'm not dissing bypass surgery. I'm just saying that for me, I knew that that wasn't the problem. 5 minutes. Thank you. That wasn't the problem. That my problem was up here. That I really couldn't figure it out. That I, on the strength of my own intellect and will, that all the books in the entire world, me reading them, and all of the knowledge in the entire world weren't going to cure this, and that the strength of my own will was just broken in this respect, that this had me licked, doesn't the big book say that about alcohol, right? That this had me licked, this had me defeated. And it took me a couple of weeks to kind of really live into that and to be willing to go to any lengths, which in my mind was simply to go back to an OA meeting, because of course I had blown that up in my head as this scary thing that I could never do and I wouldn't, you know, be safe there, and things were just, you know, I didn't want to do that because it didn't work, and my spiritual advisor and some other people kind of wrangled me into going, and I did, and I walked in, and immediately I felt like I was home. Immediately. All of my defenses, all of the things that I had built, all of the walls that I had built, just kind of, and people were like, oh, hey, how you doing? You know? I mean, some people remembered me, some people were new, but even the people that remembered me were like, oh, hi, great to see ya. And because I knew I was safe, I was willing to give a good friend a call and say, you know, will you give me a food plan, and I'm willing to do whatever you tell me to do. And, you know, I'm convinced that it doesn't really matter what she told me, like what food plan she would have given me. It was my willingness to give over, to admit that I couldn't figure it out, right? That I was willing to take something from somebody else and give it a try because I couldn't figure it out. And for me, that was the surrender. And from there, things started happening pretty quickly, you know? I mean, that was step one. I couldn't have done step one if I didn't believe that God was going to catch me if I fell. And so that was sort of step two and three kind of all at once. So when I surrendered my own will and my own, when I let myself fall, I had to have taken step three. I had to have said, yes, I'm going to make this decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of my higher power. That's just my experience. There, other people have different experiences. They have to get abstinent before they do the steps. I have to know I'm going to be safe before I let go, and I couldn't have been abstinent, and I could, because becoming abstinent and giving up the food was letting go of my safety net. And so for me, and I got to tell you that I have been safe and I have been okay, and that I still get afraid that I'm not going to be. But one day at a time, I know that this program works, and I know that my higher power and my fellows are going to catch me when I fall. I'm grateful that it's been almost 5 years, 4.5 years. I got abstinent December of 2012, 1 minute left. And when I say things started happening pretty quickly, I did the steps in a very structured way, which was very helpful because I knew that I was safe. I was able to go back and do the really, really hard work of cleaning up the wreckage of my past and doing the writing and doing the just the recognizing and the being the rigorous honesty with myself about where I'd been and the havoc I'd caused, and then to be free of that. Like, what a miracle. And once again, I have a life that is second to none. It's not perfect, but I have a way of living that works and that gives me peace. So that's my story. Thank you.